Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. What's going on with you today? I'm feeling good. It's that cold time of year. And sometimes here in New York, it takes you by surprise because the weather's been kind of friendly. And if you don't pay attention to it, you can get caught and be really, really uncomfortable. But this kind of weather right now, it's important to have your scarves and your hat and your gloves and your long underwear in order to feel comfortable, but also to protect yourself. Because when you're going in from coming out from the cold and into a warm atmosphere, the body doesn't like those changes very much. So take care of yourself and bring a hat and scarf along with you if you're in one of these cold places. Okay, I am really excited about this program. We're going to be talking about something I'm extremely passionate about, and I'm going to introduce my guest, Dr. Ting Bao. She is a breast medical oncologist who takes an integrative medicine approach to cancer care. She incorporates complementary therapies into cancer treatment to promote patients' physical strength and mental resilience, helping them to maintain the best quality of life possible and to support their treatment goals. Such therapies include diet and lifestyle changes, mind-body therapies, physical exercise, acupuncture, and massage therapy. She also counsels patients on dietary supplements so that they can avoid risks associated with their improper use. As a board-certified acupuncturist, she uses acupuncture to reduce cancer treatment-induced side effects. Dr. Bao works with patients who have been diagnosed with any type of cancer and has a special focus on patients with breast cancer. Her goal is to develop and deliver state-of-the-art evidence-based integrative oncology care to enhance and potentially extend survival for cancer patients. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Well, I loved reading about you, and I love hearing about you, and I want to hear a lot more because I really believe that this is where, if we're going to succeed with cancer, we're going to have an integrative approach, because what we're doing with just the medical community alone, it's not enough.
I agree with you. Basically, I mean, it's important to meet with, you know, medical oncology surgeons and all that. So, and radiation oncologists, and they really treat the cancer. But our job is actually also to help support the body, to make the body strong enough to deal with the side effects of the treatment, to be strong. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I believe that food can be medicine.
Yes.
And food can prevent a lot of illness. The reason why I got you here on the show today is because a few months ago I went to the Head and Neck Cancer Conference at the Marriott Hotel. It was the 100th year anniversary of the department at Memorial Sloan Kettering treating head and neck cancers. And I was kind of stunned by some of the things I saw outside of the conference. For example, in the area where they were giving us food, I saw only cancer-promoting foods on the table, sugary foods, white flour foods. And I was talking to a number of people, and one of the exhibitors there said, at least he acknowledged that healthier patients do better with the treatment than weaker patients. So at the very least, you want to keep your patients strong and healthy when they're being given radiation or chemotherapy or surgery.
Right, definitely. That's very important. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so how did you get interested, in addition to wanting to become a doctor, adding these other components to your method?
Well, basically, I grew up in China, actually, so I always take a sort of a holistic view of the body. And then I've noticed when I was a college student, I actually did a summer internship in an acupuncture clinic. Then I realized all these cancer patients were trying to integrate acupuncture, all this diet, exercise thing by themselves, and in addition to their traditional cancer treatment. So I thought that's, you know, if their doctor can potentially advise them on this, they'll be so much happier. And they actually told me that, you know, knowing my background, they said, you know, Ting, this is the way to go. Yeah, go for it and do some research for us too. So that's what got me interested in this. That was what, 15 years ago.
Okay, that was 15 years ago.
Yes.
And we still don't have enough doctors like you. I mean, most medical doctors have no training or a couple of hours in nutrition and prevention.
That is true. Yeah, not too much, not too many doctors. Although we do, there are more and more doctors interested in this, and we even have a Society for Integrative Oncology, and also we have this American Institute for Cancer Research focused on diet and exercise.
Yeah, I like
for cancer
them.
Patients. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So we definitely there are more and more people interested in this.
It's a scary thing when someone is diagnosed with cancer. Frankly, I don't know how you deal with it day in and day out. It takes a very special person to manage that because, I mean, I'm sure there's a certain degree where you care, but you can't care too much because it's going to affect your objective situation evaluating patients. There's not always a happy ending.
No, it's not a happy ending. I like what one of my friends used to say, you know, but there's always hope. So there's hope for, maybe there's not necessarily at some point no hope for cure, but there's always hope for better quality of life, better ending. So there's always things we can do. And I agree, I mean, being an oncologist is not easy. But truth be known that over the past many years, the prognosis of cancer has improved significantly. So the survival rate has improved significantly. And so now in my clinic, it's not just seeing dying patients. We're actually seeing lots of cancer survivors. They do really well. Yeah, that's what keeps me going. And in addition, I'm interested in research, and that also what keeps me going.
Yeah. I don't want to discuss too much whether we're doing better or not, because it depends on how you look at data, and there's lots of different sides about whether we are doing better or not, unfortunately. But let's talk about what you do. What are some of the things that you believe can help a patient who's going through cancer treatment? Can we start with diet? What things you recommend and don't recommend?
Sure. So basically, I have two clinics. One is a breast cancer clinic and another is integrative medicine clinic. I'll just mainly focus on the integrative medicine clinic. So basically, when patients have the diagnosis of cancer or any stage of the treatment, then they can, you know, come to see us. Then we'll talk about, you know, integrative medicine. So we usually start with diet. Then we have this detailed handout for the patient. Mm. But there's a few major principles. So usually we believe a balanced diet is important. And so rather than just saying, you know, not to eat certain thing, but we really think a balanced diet is good. And that includes, you know, each meal you should include five things, usually fluid and fruit and vegetable and protein and carb and a little fat. So a balanced diet is important. And then in addition, we usually, whole food is better than just refined food. And low sugar, as you mentioned, so that's another one. And then we usually discourage patients from juicing, even though lots of people do juicing. But we do think there's lots of benefit in those fibers and pulps. Especially in cancer patients, lots of them actually having constipation as a result of some, like, treatment. Mm-hmm. So keeping that fibers and pulps is important. And then also all the studies suggested not too much red meat. Like, if you like red meat, that's fine, but just limit it to, like, less than two servings per week. And each serving is fist size.
A small size.
Yeah. So that. And then, you know, usually it's just the common sense, just balanced diet and of whole food and low sugar and low fat and organic. Because lots of studies suggest organic food is actually more nutritious, and some they have higher omega-3 compared to omega-6. So those are good.
Okay, so I have some questions based on what you just said.
Sure.
I believe fiber is really important, no question about that. And we get that primarily from whole plant foods, minimally processed foods, very important. It's all about moving everything through the body, the good things and the bad things, and fiber helps us do that. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm a vegan. I eat a whole food, plant-based, organic diet. I get plenty of fiber. But when you mentioned juicing, what were you talking about? Were you talking about juicing fruits or vegetables, something?
I think a mixture will be okay, but then, yeah, some people like to juice fruit alone, so that's extract too much sugar.
Too much sugar, yeah, okay. So, I asked you because I'm a big proponent of green juicing, and As I mentioned to you earlier, I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer in 2006, so it's been 8 years. Mm-hmm. And my daily medicine is a green juice. I eat a lot of dark leafy green vegetables, but I make sure I also get a juice for lots of different reasons. So mm-hmm. I think it's important to clarify when we talk about juice, whether it's a fruit juice or a vegetable, because the fruit juice has sugar.
Yeah, but where do you get the fibers then?
Well, mm-hmm. all my nutrition, all mm-hmm. my calories come from plant foods, whole plant foods. Okay. So all mm-hmm. I'm eating is fiber. Okay. I mean, I have salads and steamed vegetables and whole grains and beans.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
I get plenty of fiber.
Yeah, we just want to kind of avoid. Some people don't like to eat vegetable and they ended up just juicing everything and then just drink the, yeah.
Right.
We still think fiber is important.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And people should learn how to like their vegetables.
Yeah, they should. And especially, we usually try to recommend patients to take vegetable, like plant-based diet, and especially the cruciferous vegetable.
Good.
They're really good. Yeah, they
right.
have some kind of anti-cancer agent there. Yeah.
Absolutely. The mm-hmm. I never say this right, the isothiocyanates.
I
something
think so.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. HDAC inhibitor and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk more about sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar's in the news a lot lately about how mm-hmm. Unhealthy it is for us.
Yeah. So basically,
sugar and cancer.
Right. Sugar and cancer. Yeah. It started with some sort of retrospective case control trial and shows, you know, for cancer patients starting from brain tumor patients. And they noticed that when their glucose is not under good control, their prognosis is actually a lot worse. They don't do as well compared to those people who has better glucose control. So that started a whole array of research. And even now, like breast cancer, I know there's like research in like study randomized patients in like metformin versus not to try to better control sugar versus not. And so those trials, and in terms of, you know, what to recommend to patients, initially, it didn't quite hit me until I myself started looking at the labels of different like drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Then it really hits me. So each teaspoon has about 4 grams sugar. And then if you look at certain drinks on the side, they have like one serving has like 32 grams sugar. So that's like
8 teaspoons.
I know. So
yeah.
That really hits me. That started making me realize it's a problem. So the idea is, you know, I think I read it somewhere like years ago, like 40 years ago, people's average sugar intake was something like 10 grams, like additional sugar. And now it's almost approached to 100 grams. There's a problem with that.
Yeah.
And studies suggest that may increase inflammation and cause lots of problems. Another thing is once you take sugar, then your insulin level increase, and then that can stimulate the insulin growth factor in some tumor cells. So that can be a problem. So in theory, it does make sense. And so now, you know, in a way, when you eat, you need to be mindful of what you're eating. So just take a look. Make sure you're not taking too much sugar. Yeah.
Well, when I was going through advanced ovarian cancer treatment with a 10 mm-hmm. to 20% survival rate, I was focused on being one of the 10 to 20% and surviving. And that meant which I did. And that meant mm-hmm. no sugar. I mean, I didn't eat any sugar. And the fruit that I ate berries, the mm-hmm. low-sugar fruits mm-hmm. That had anti-cancer-fighting properties. And it surprises me sometimes, a lot, all the time, when patients that are going through cancer treatment don't want to do ultimately the very best that they possibly can from all angles in order to survive.
I don't think it's they don't want to. It's just sometimes they may not know.
They don't know.
Yeah, they don't know.
But the doctors don't know either.
Well, it's still controversial, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in some areas. So, lots of doctors really believe in hard evidence. So the hardest evidence is randomized control trial. Imagine how hard it is to randomize patients into high sugar diet versus some people into low sugar diet. How many people will consent for that if they know they think high sugar will cause cancer or something? So it's just hard to do. Therefore, as a result, lots of time we don't really have those like hard gold standard evidence. So I think that's one of the reasons some of my colleagues is not buying into this.
Yeah, now I'm familiar to some degree with Memorial Sloan Kettering. I consulted there, and recently my cousin was treated there. And I've talked to numerous doctors there, and I just wonder, what is it like for you working there? Because I know many of them really don't believe in the connection between food and medical treatment.
Honestly, I have been very happy there.
Good.
I started working there. I moved from Maryland. So I started working there 6 months ago. And so far, I have been very impressed by my colleagues' dedication to their patient care. Every time you have a question about your patient, you email someone at 8 p.m., 10 p.m., they email you right back. So they truly care about the patient, that's for sure. And then in terms of whether they buy this whole diet thing or not, I can see where they're coming from. I think they all want to do the best thing for their patient. And even yesterday, someone said, please don't tell my metastatic breast cancer patients not to eat sugar because I want them to enjoy their life, enjoy the end of their life. I mean, I think for them, it just means, you know, when you don't have hard evidence, you don't know for sure with a randomized control trial, then you sort of deprive the patients, cookie taking or something that can make them happy, then that's not fair. So I think that's where they're coming from. But so far, everyone has been very respectful for what I'm doing. And if they have questions, if their patient has questions regarding, you know, integrative medicine or diet, they usually say, I don't know for sure, but why don't you go ahead and talk to integrative medicine service. So I don't think they're totally against it. It's just the fact, you know, their stand is just try to treat it as scientific as possible. So show me the data, then we'll do it.
Right. There is a lot of data out there, and
true.
I do agree that it's hard to get 100% accurate data because it's so expensive to do. Well, it's not possible to do the test that we really want to do to prove what we want to prove. But there's still a lot of very convincing evidence. What frustrates me, and maybe you, I don't know, but before you said you want to give a patient hope. So even someone with metastatic breast cancer, there's always a chance that they will survive until they're dead. And, you know, they could totally turn things around. And there are a handful of cases. Some doctors like to call them outliers or what's the word that they use that's escaping me right now. Anyway, those are the magic cases that I think we should be focusing on, the people that have these extreme illnesses that nobody thinks are going to survive, and then somehow they survive. Don't we want to know what happened?
Certainly, but as you see, the number is not very high.
But that's where the magic is.
True, but we don't really live in a magical world. But anyway, I agree. But on the other hand, you know, if someone is really, you know, having chemo and having all the side effects and there's really nothing they, you know, can help them and they just crave a little ice cream, I don't think I'll tell them, okay, don't eat any sugar, you'll die from that. So, you know, just enjoy life. I really think it's important. There's an important balance is important. You need to both enjoy life and also try to do the best thing for you.
I guess to when we're patients, it's really up to us to take some responsibility. It's not just up to the doctors to tell us what to do. We have to make our own choices.
Totally.
It's just sometimes some doctors don't make that easy for us because we have arguments with them. But let's move to supplements. Are there supplements that you think are important, especially when going through cancer treatment? I know for myself, I spent about $1,000 a month on nutraceuticals when I was going through chemotherapy.
I have to say, I mean, I am hired by MSK. So, I mean, basically, Memorial Sloan Kettering's policy is basically when you're undergoing active treatment, don't take any supplement unless consult a physician. And I'm most familiar with breast cancer service, and usually we are okay with patient taking calcium, which is important for bone health, especially if they have bony metastasis. Mm-hmm. And vitamin D, there's some data suggesting, you know, patients' vitamin D level you know, the lower the level is, the slightly higher risk of recurrences. So we're totally fine with calcium, vitamin D. In terms of other supplements, once in doubt, consult us, consult integrated medicine doctor. There are a few common ones that lots of people are interested in using that worthwhile mentioning here. So one is curcumin, which is active ingredient of turmeric. So basically, this is very important for Indian food, and this is a lot in the curry and stuff. So first, one thing most people don't know is it's really hard for the body to absorb. So in order to absorb, actually, usually you're recommended to take it with black pepper. That's one. And then the second thing is, if you go to our About Herbs website, which has, you know, 270 plus monogram on different kind of supplements, dietary supplements, and then it's really said it may interact with an enzyme that clears some of the drugs. It's called CYP450. So that enzyme. So you need to be just extra careful. On the other hand, with that being said, most clinical trial, they use very high dose of curcumin. It's something like 4 grams per day. Mm-hmm. But if you just want to do it, you know, when you're cooking, add a little bit, that's totally fine. That, I would say, is, you know, 5 milligrams per day or something. So that's totally fine. Another point I want to make is this dosage does matter. You know, in those trials, we usually try to use high dose of supplements, such as, you know, 4 grams, 8 grams and stuff. But then, yeah, usually when you take it by yourself or through food, it's usually by milligram. So the potential, you know, interaction or side effects notice in those trials most likely will not happen when you're just taking small amount. Yeah. So ginger, we usually tell people to go ahead and eat some ginger.
That's good fine. With the stomach too.
Yeah, it's very good with stomach, according to Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, I'm Chinese. So it's very good with that. And when people are having some like chemo-induced nausea, vomiting, and then they sometimes chew some ginger, that helps. And also we tell them to kind of grate the ginger and make some ginger tea. That really helps. And may also in winter can make you help you to feel warm. So ginger, and also it's an anti-inflammatory sort of food. So that's good. And then, you know, wine, gosh, there's lots of controversy about wine. And then some epidemiologic studies suggest that, you know, the more wine you take, women, you take, the higher risk of breast cancer you have. But, you know, on the other hand, once again, enjoy life. So so if, you know, if alcohol is not important for you and stuff, that's fine. Then just don't start drinking wine. But on the other hand, if that's really important for you, then and that's what keep you going and stuff.
And
in
help
moderation.
Relax you. Maybe.
Yeah, help relax and stuff. Right. The moderation. Yeah.
Okay, what about something like L-glutamine? I took L-glutamine all the time because I was told it would help with neuropathy, and I never had neuropathy. So I know I'm only one person, but it worked for me.
I'm pretty sure there has been like a randomized controlled trial to show it didn't really help, yeah, with neuropathy. But on the other hand, you know, L-glutamine, you know, I don't think there's too much harm. It's just amino acid, and potentially the problem is whether it can really cross the blood-brain barrier and go to the brain to help the brain. Lots of people take that for that, for the chemo brain or something. So I'm not convinced for sure. And also, since it's just amino acid, and so why not just take it from food? We really believe, you know, rather than taking all the supplements, getting those vitamins from food
I
is
believe
actually
in that.
More important. Yeah, I actually just came back from this AICR meeting, American Institute for Cancer Research meeting, and they talk about one of the biggest themes is dose response curve. So people used to think the more the better, but now it's actually the curve has changed from a straight line to a U shape. So basically, you know, when you take certain amount, it's helpful, and then when you take excessive amount, it's actually harmful. So that, I don't know if you have heard about this SELECT trial. This is sort of a supplement study in patients high risk for prostate cancer. So NCI spent millions of dollars supporting this trial. They enrolled about like over 3,000 men at high risk for prostate cancer, randomized them into vitamin E and selenium versus, you know, placebo. Mm-hmm. So hypothesis is both vitamin E and selenium are antioxidant, and that can help with decrease prostate cancer risk. And some, you know, anecdotal and or retrospective data and epidemiologic data shows that. And then, unfortunately, 5 years later, there's no difference between the two arms. 7 years later, there's actually more harm in the supplement group. So it takes years for people to really figure out why. So one theory is maybe because in the U.S., for some reason, lots of people are already pretty aware of, like, you know, low vitamin E and selenium are bad, potentially increased risk of prostate cancer. So this patient population in the U.S., their level of selenium is actually not on the low side. Mm. It's actually on the high side. So in patients who are already having, like, more than enough selenium, if you give them more, it's harmful. So that's why, you know, it's just the more is not necessarily better. We do need certain research.
Right. Now, what about mushrooms? I call mushrooms natural chemotherapy.
I'm not sure about chemotherapy because I'm not convinced mushroom can really, like, you know, kill cancer cells, but I do think it's improve immune system. Mm-hmm. So there are three types of mushrooms, major mushrooms we sometimes recommend to our patients. Maitake mushroom. So our center actually has done some research on that and shows it's kind of improves the immune system. And then another one is Coriolis mushroom. Mm-hmm. And then another one is reishi mushroom. Mm-hmm. So all this, I mean, if you go to our About Herbs website, it listed in detail the evidence supporting them. So right now, we do think it's maybe good for to help immune system. And talk to us if you're interested in taking some mushroom. In fact, we're thinking about launching another clinical trial to see if mushroom can help cancer patients improve immune system during treatment.
Yeah, it would be good to know. I believe in them. I took them, but they're expensive. The concentrated reishi Coriolis, it's probably less expensive than a lot of medical treatment. So
it's possible. The only thing is most insurance cover medical treatment.
And they don't cover supplements.
Exactly. So it ended up out-of-pocket costs maybe higher.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I'm poor today, I said. But I'm alive. Okay, a couple more things I wanted to talk about before I let you go, and that is acupuncture.
Yes.
And you are an acupuncture therapist.
I am. I'm an acupuncturist, yes.
So what can that do for us during cancer treatment?
A lot. So all these studies, there have been so many studies about acupuncture, actually. So suggest one definitive benefit is to help with chemo-induced nausea and vomiting. There has been lots of randomized controlled trial, at least 13 that I know of, maybe more. So that can help decrease chemo-induced nausea and vomiting. And then we're doing trials to see if it can help with chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy, tingling, numbness sensation, tip of fingers or toes. And then another one is like radiation. In head and neck cancer patients, they sometimes, you know, after radiation, their salivary gland got toasted. So they ended up having no saliva. And there's really no good treatment for that. And then acupuncture may help. Mm. There has been, MD Anderson is a pioneer on this right now. So they have lots of trials going on. And then it shows actually acupuncture can help prevent development of like xerostomia, dry mouth, as a result of radiation in head and neck cancer patients. And also, if they already have this xerostomia, then they can be treated. Acupuncture can be used to decrease the symptoms. And then, you know, the fatigue, chemo-induced fatigue or treatment-induced fatigue, that acupuncture may help. Lymphedema, our center has so far published two pilot studies. It shows acupuncture decreased the extent of lymphedema, is the swelling of the arms.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
After you take out the lymph nodes. And then right now we have a randomized controlled trial and try to see if it really helps. Yeah.
When I had chemotherapy, they gave me like a pin in between somewhere, I forget where they put it, somewhere around here that I kept on during my treatment while I was getting infused. They called it acupuncture, and it was supposed to help it for nausea.
Did it?
Well, I never vomited during any of my treatment. I had two four-month rounds. I did carboplatin Taxotere, and I did very aggressive cisplatin gemcitabine. And, I mean, I had a little feeling in my stomach, but I never really... I ate plenty. I gained weight on chemotherapy, and I had no problem eating or anything. So maybe this little thing worked. I don't know.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. it's hard to know. But there's not just one point. There are, like, over 360 points in the body. And then, yeah, for patients who are afraid of needles, sometimes we teach them acupressure. Just basically show them the point, then they can press on it. And that helps, too.
Do you do this while they're being infused? Or
They can, yeah. There's something called C-band. You may have heard of it. Yeah. So that's to help treat seasickness. But it's the same mechanism, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I usually tell my patients if they're afraid of needles or something, I just go and go to Amazon, $8, get a bunch of C-bands, and then put it on your wrist. And, yeah, and there's this point, PC6. It helps with nausea.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, the last thing is the mind-body therapy. What is that?
Oh, mind-body. So basically, what is it? it's basically some daily practice to reduce stress. So that includes meditation and, you know, massage. Some people even think acupuncture is that type of mind-body approach. Just really something you do can help you to just become calm and then less stressed. And so usually there are licensed mind-body expert can teach you, can initially teach patients who don't know how to do meditation or anything of this sort, then kind of give you individualized session and teach you a few techniques to help you to relax. So they can teach you the breathing, deep breathing, and
This is something that we all need to do, and we should learn right out of the womb.
Sure.
Children need to learn how to do this. It should be part of our daily routine. It makes such a difference, not just with health, but with all of our well-being and dealing with everything.
Definitely, and especially even, recently, I mean, lately there has been more data suggesting, you know, stress can increase the risk of cancer, increase your blood pressure, bad for your heart and all that. So, yeah, I totally agree. Everyone should learn it, and there's no harm done. Yeah, meditation and journaling. Sometimes I tell my patients to journal. I noticed a big difference. Yeah. So I remember I had this young lady diagnosed with breast cancer. First came to see me crying all the time. So I started, you know, we talk about diet, exercise. By the way, exercise is very important.
Yeah.
Diet, exercise, you know, mind-body approach. So she started journaling. She started meditation. She started praying. I mean, yeah. And then do massage and, you know, exercise and all that. And then 2 months later, she came to my office as a new person.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was so nice. It just, so, you know, it works for certain people. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Memorial Sloan Kettering is very lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for coming into the studio today and talking to me on It's All About Food, Dr. Ting Bao. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back. Hello, everybody. I'm back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Did you enjoy that last half hour? I did. What I got from it, I knew this before, but I want to highlight something that I got from it. It's so important if you are going through a health crisis, and I speak from experience, it's so important to find a doctor that you are in harmony with. If you're working with a doctor that doesn't listen to you and isn't open to what makes you tick and what you're comfortable with, you're going to have more conflict and more challenge than you need. I know when I was going through my advanced ovarian cancer treatment 8 years ago, I spoke with a number of doctors, and some of them made me cry for joy. Some I left laughing, knowing I am not going back there because they are not going to do what's in my best interest. Not that they wanted to do badly. All I think most doctors want to do the right thing. But we all have different approaches. It was just like Dr. Bao was telling us how some doctors feel like if a patient who is seemingly terminal wants to have ice cream or something with sugar in it, well, then why not let them? And there's some value to that. But when somebody realizes that sugar can be harmful, I think the doctor should support that. And we know, she was talking about how some doctors need hard evidence. There's so much evidence out there. And the approach that I took was, if there's some potential that a supplement or a food or whatever could help me, I was going to use it. There were some things that I didn't use that people suggested to me just because the evidence was really, really weak, but there's a lot of evidence that's really powerful. And we know that cruciferous vegetables, at least, don't harm us. They're only good. And I really think those mushrooms, Coriolis, Reishi, and Maitake, are very powerful. All right. That's that. So I want to remind you, you can always give me comments and questions at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. Let me know what you think of the programs. If you have any comments and questions, I answer them. So please ask away. Let me know what you think. I want to tell you what I think. So in the news recently, we've got the big company Unilever. Have you heard of them? They make a lot of food. And they're angry with a little company called Hampton Creek. Hampton Creek Foods, you may have heard of them. I had their CEO on this show about a year ago or so, Josh Tetrick. And Hampton Creek is trying to remove the actual chicken egg from products that use eggs. And what they're doing in their laboratories is finding plant foods when put in certain combinations will create the same final product that you would get instead of using eggs. And the idea behind it is, number one, eliminating all the cruelty of producing all those unfortunate chickens that are crammed into factory farms and have their beaks cut off, and many of them are caged where they can't move their wings. It's a very horrible situation. So why not? If we could make a food product that is the same or better without the cruelty, why wouldn't you want to do that? And what they're learning is that it's cheaper to do this. This is a very exciting concept. Now, those of us who have been vegans for a long time or looking to reduce or eliminate animal foods, we know how to make baked goods and other foods without using eggs. There's flax seeds, chia seeds, bananas, apple sauce. It depends on what you're making, but there are lots of different substitutes which will give you the same or better results in your baked goods. And we make all kinds of wonderful, like, scrambles with tofu, and I love using garbanzo bean flour to make omelets. If you season them up and add all kinds of wonderful vegetables, you're making some really good dishes that may not be exactly the same, but I think they're better. Okay, so what's the deal here? Unilever makes Hellmann's mayonnaise. Now, we call it Hellmann's here on the East Coast, and on the West Coast, it's called Best Foods. But it's a mayonnaise made from eggs. And they're annoyed because Hampton Creek's Just Mayo product is starting to get a little more market share than Unilever wants to share. So they're suing because they want to say that Hampton Creek can't call their product mayo. They want to own the word mayonnaise and mayo. And Hampton Creek believes that mayo or mayonnaise implies eggs. And actually, the FDA's definition of mayonnaise says it's an egg product. So they're fighting. And it's just a fascinating scenario. And I hope Hampton Creek wins because I like what they're doing and I like their product. Unilever is saying that they're misleading, that Hampton Creek is misleading the public. I don't think they are. They've been out for a few years now talking about what they're doing, and they've been really clear. And do we have any questions coming in for the show, perhaps? I'll take them if anybody wants to ask them, or email me at info@realmeals.org. But what I'm saying is, I don't think they have been misleading to the public. Okay, but this brings up some interesting things about naming foods. So something similar to the mayo scenario is cheese, for example. You may remember we had Miyoko Shinner on recently talking about her new company, Miyoko's Kitchen, and she's coming up with some delicious nut-based, dare I say, cheeses. She calls them cultured nut products because in California, you can't call this product a cheese unless it's made from cow's milk or animal milk. And I got a problem with that. It's cheese. It tastes like cheese. It looks like cheese. It's cheese. But the companies that make cheese from animal milk don't want the competition, and they don't want to mislead the public. And on the subject of cultured nut foods or cheese alternatives, we recently tried a new product put out by Field Roast. Do you know Field Roast? It's a grain meat. Oh, maybe I shouldn't call it meat. It's a meat alternative or analog. And some of their products are very tasty. Well, they have a new family member, and it's called Chow. It's called Chow Slices, C-H-A-O. It's a vegan coconut cheese alternative. They're calling it a cheese alternative because they can't call it cheese. How long are we going to keep up with this? I'm kind of fascinated with all the alternative cheese products that are coming out now. Some of the original ones that came out are downright terrible. But the new ones that are coming out are really interesting and game changers, in my opinion. And they're starting to make these cheese alternatives with the same things that animal milk cheese are made with, enzymes and probiotics. And they're growing those things in the cheese. And that's what gives cheese flavor. Oh, and that's what gives the cheese alternative products flavor, too. So this particular cheese, it comes wrapped like American cheese slices. And it's made with a traditionally fermented soybean curd called chow, C-H-A-O, made by the Vietnamese. And then they mix it with coconut oil, and that's what makes it melt. Now, I really like it. And it is non-GMO, and it's non-dairy. It's not organic. And it's not the healthiest food in the world. But if we're going to be eating cheese, or I think it would be better to substitute the animal-based cheese, because growing these animals to make milk is horrifically cruel and bad for the environment and not too good for our health. So if we could make a very similar or better product and avoid all of that, wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? But what I'm saying is these cheese products, these alternative cheese products, these vegan cheese products, these vegan cheese alternative, these nut-cultured, soy-cultured things, they're not the healthiest food. They're not kale and broccoli. But a little goes a long way. And when you're craving these foods, and occasionally, you know, you might want to have a grilled cheese, this chow product is amazing. So check it out, Chow Vegan Slices. They have creamy original, coconut herb, and tomato cayenne. I've just tried the tomato cayenne, and it was quite good. It's not something that I'm going to eat all the time, just for an occasional treat. All right, I wanted to talk about some more products. Oh, but not just yet. So on this same subject of what's in a name, should we call it cheese or not cheese? Should we call it mayonnaise or not mayonnaise? There's something I like about branding a food based on its region. I don't have a problem with this. I like that champagne, the sparkling wine that the French make, comes from the region of Champagne. I like that. I like that Bordeaux wines come from the French Bordeaux region. I like branding based on a region. I think there's a lot of subtlety to it, because when we're making artisanal products or products from a certain region, that region has a unique soil, it has a unique climate, and it makes a unique food. I don't like calling Dijon mustard that's not from Dijon. I don't like it giving it the Dijon name. It could be called some kind of like a wine mustard or something. But if it's not from Dijon, personally, I don't think it should be called Dijon. Don't you like saying Dijon? Dijon, Dijon. but there are a lot of foods like that. And I like the fact that in France, they call bread pain, P-A-I-N. And that means it's basically just flour and water and yeast, a little salt. If you put eggs in it, it's not called pain anymore. It becomes brioche. I like that. But I don't think that's the same as the word cheese or mayonnaise. It's just my opinion. But I think we can have cheese made from nut milks and coconut milk. And I think we can have mayonnaise that doesn't have eggs in it. Say hallelujah to that. All right. So a few products I want to talk about. Recently, I was given a Conscious Box, and you can find out about Conscious Box at consciousbox.com, and it's kind of a fun thing. They have a subscription, and I don't know that I would go for a regular subscription, but to get a few of them, it's great for, let's say you know somebody who just became a vegan and they want to find out about all the vegan products. They have a vegan Conscious Box, and you can get one. One every month, or one every 3 months, for 6 months or 3 months. They have a variety of things. Anyway, I got this Conscious Box, and it came with some sample products that I got to know. Some of them are worth mentioning, so I'm going to mention them. One of them is called, you're going to love this, Primal Pit Paste. Have you heard of Primal Pit Paste? It's for the underarm, and it says killing the odor without killing your body. Now, what I love about this product is you can eat it. Now, I wouldn't eat it, but every ingredient in here is food or things that we put in food. And if you've heard me before, I'm really particular about personal care products, and I believe that we need to be really careful about what we put on our skin and what we use in our hair. All our personal care products should be made from ingredients that are recognizable. And I think a good rule of thumb is if they're ingredients that we can eat, then they shouldn't be too harmful to put on our skin. Our skin's our largest organ, and anything you put on your skin gets into your body. It's pretty simple. That's why I love, for example, using coconut oil. I use it on my skin. I use it as a makeup remover, an eye makeup remover. I put it on my hair. I love coconut oil. Primal Pit Paste. Say that. Primal Pit Paste. Primal Pit Paste. It's made from organic coconut oil, organic raw shea butter, non-aluminum baking soda, organic arrowroot powder, and organic essential oils. The one I had a lovely lavender scent, and I like it. It works. And I'm not one who likes to use those kinds of products. So I give a thumbs up to Primal Pit Paste. Another company I want to talk about is Me and the Girls. And their website is meandthegirls.com, spelled out. What I got in my Conscious Box was their lip balm. And it's the season where I live in the cold when your lips get uncomfortably dry and chapped. And as a vegan, it can be kind of challenging finding something to keep your lips comfortable and smooth. and Luscious. And their Luscious lip balm, I think that's what it's called, is quite tasty and works very good. And the company has a really nice philosophy. Beneficial organic beauty focuses on the development of the most effective, lush moisturizers to make your skin soft, useful, and beautiful. During the process, we create working environments that foster creativity, inclusivity, and respect among our employees. Sales generate income that support organic farmers in their efforts to produce safe organic crops and also allow fair trade workers to sustainably harvest lush pods and seeds at fair wages. Shouldn't every company be like that? So those were two fun products that I got out of the Conscious Box that I thought were worth mentioning. Okay. There's a holiday coming up. It's called Thanksgiving here in the United States. Those in Canada have already had their Thanksgiving last month. It's an interesting holiday. I like it very much. And I recently wrote how much it means to me on my ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com website. And I hope you take the time to visit ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com and read my Thanksgiving story. I share a number of different experiences of Thanksgiving. And it's just an interesting concept because the idea about it is lovely. And many cultures have these different holidays where we celebrate harvest and being grateful for the food that we have. And that, I mean, we should do that. We should do that every day, being grateful, thinking about every bite that we put in our mouth of the food that we get. Something I also like to say, I haven't said it in a while, is anything you eat when you're eating it, whether it's healthy or not healthy, you should enjoy it and embrace it as you're taking it in. You shouldn't be saying, oh, I shouldn't be eating this. This is not good for me. No. That shouldn't happen while you're eating. While you're eating, you should tell your body to take the good from what you're eating and let the rest go. But everything you eat, if you're going to eat it, enjoy it. All right, back to my little my Thanksgiving story. Thanksgiving can be extremely stressful. We have, especially when we have dietary issues, and there are a lot of different kinds of ways people are eating today. It can be really challenging to prepare a dinner that's going to work for everyone. People can be gluten-free on a low-salt diet, on a paleo diet, on a vegan diet, on a vegan raw diet, on a vegan macro diet, on a lacto-ovo diet, on a high-protein diet, on a low-carb diet, on a low-fat diet, on a high-fat diet. You know, we're a little nutty when it comes to food, aren't we? Anyway, and I've got my own preferences and my own favorites. So I talk about that at ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. And, of course, we have recipes for you. And our beautiful feature is a recipe that my partner Gary created last year. And it is our new tradition. And it is the red curry squash stuffed with polenta stuffing. That's a little redundant. Red curry squash with polenta stuffing. Now, the red curry squash, what a beautiful invention this is. And you may not be able to find it everywhere, and it's better to shop early than late when it comes to picking out your squashes. But it's a beautiful red-orange squash, and it's got the cutest little point at the top of it. And you can cut the top off, scoop out the seeds inside, and fill it with this lovely stuffing and roast it, actually, like that people serve during Thanksgiving, and you can slice it and carve it at the table. It's stunning, and you can get that recipe at ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. We have some other wonderful ones, and if you haven't seen our Thanksgiving food show yet, it's right there at the homepage for you to check out some of my favorite Thanksgiving recipes, like the French cassoulet. I think it's perfect for Thanksgiving. You know, the three sisters, corn, squash, and beans. It's a beautiful concept, the three sisters, and the Indians knew the importance of growing corn, squash, and beans together. They're companion crops, and the three help each other. I just love the fact that we acknowledge that and can see how nature works in cooperation. So you should read a little bit about the three sisters and celebrate them by putting corn, beans, and squash on your Thanksgiving table. So that's where the cassoulet comes in. It's a luscious bean dish with a creamy mustard herb dressing. Fabulous. We have a decadent, epic lasagna made with butternut squash and Brussels sprouts and a tempeh bacon filling, cashew cream, bechamel. I'm getting hungry. It is so good. And don't forget turnips. I couldn't stand turnips as a kid. I've learned to love them, and they're great alone or mashed together with potatoes. They're great in a soup. That's all for now. So I think that I'm going to end the show right there on a delicious note. Have a wonderfully delicious week. Of course, next week we have another program with Vasanta Molina, and we're going to be covering a lot of nutrition questions, and that'll occur before Thanksgiving. But I wanted to give you a little heads up before Thanksgiving so you can start getting ready. Thanks for joining me. I'm Karen Hart. Glad you've been listening to It's All About Food, and have a delicious week.